Welcome into the Internet Allen Show. This is episode 36. Just looked. It's been like 10 and a half months of this podcast, turning a year old soon, which is a little bit crazy to think about. I'm talking as if this is like a big popular podcast that everybody listens to, and oh, it's a year old now. No, that's still about as popular as when it started. Maybe even less so. But still crazy. It is 9:11 p.m., never forget. Wednesday night, May 8th. It's May, right? Yeah. The Knicks and Pacers are currently at halftime. I don't remember who's winning, but I think Jalen Brunson is hurt, so that's a problem. A lot to talk about this week. I say that every week. Probably actually less to talk about this week than in the past weeks. No Vikings draft talk, but a lot of Wolves. Very, very important things happening in the Wolves world. We'll talk about that. I'm going to go over all the NBA playoffs in general. Probably take a peek into the NHL playoffs just to remind myself what's going on, because obviously I'm a big fan. I already know, but I just need a reminder. And then talk about the Twins. It's been great for the Twins as well. Finally lost a couple games, but so back in general. A new segment on the show today. We'll get there when we get there. That's not the name of the segment. We will get to the segment when we get there. We have a horse of the week and then a post game as well. So let's get right into it. The Minnesota Timberwolves, our Minnesota Timberwolves from our home state, not really, but our Minnesota Timberwolves, the ones that used to play Alexei Shved and Nikola Pekovic and Chase Buttinger in the starting lineup. Those people, that team is up 2-0 on the defending champions in the Western Conference semifinals, and both games were in their place. So we're going home up 2. Game 1 was great. It was a game that we felt like we had to win by how well we played, and we did it. People talk, I'll obviously go in depth in these games in just a minute here, but people talk about when you are a playoff team starting on the road, you got to win 1 of 2. And then you steal home court, you take care of your business at home, and then, you know, that's sort of the blueprint for winning the series when you start off as the road team. You don't have home field or home court advantage. That's the blueprint, right? And so game one, you're looking to steal the game. You might not be the better, might not be the better team. You might shoot really well that game, but if you have an advantage or it's close in that game, you have to win it, because if you get close and you don't win, it can be very sort of demoralizing and bad for momentum's sake. obviously great that we won game one. Game two was, like, I don't want to be dramatic, but it was perhaps the best performance in the playoffs by a Minnesota team in my lifetime. Like, I don't think that's too exaggerated to say. We haven't had a lot of success in the playoffs. It's not news to anybody that's listening to this pod or really anybody who knows anything about sports at all. But I think, like, the closest thing I can think of is the Minnesota Miracle. But that's more of like a big exciting moment than a just complete domination of a game. I haven't ever felt, and we'll get to sort of the big picture stuff in a moment here, but I haven't ever really felt the way about a Minnesota team that I felt and am feeling about this Minnesota Timberwolves team after game two. And that's a little scary, but let's go in depth into games. Game one. I made so many notes, I didn't write the score down. That's good. Good for me. What was it? Saturday night? Yeah. 106-99. Edwards had 43. Clearly the best player on the court. We were somewhat clearly the best team on the court. Obviously, it's a 7-point game. It's week one of the game, so obviously we're better. But Cat also had 20. Naz Reid was 16 off the bench on a really efficient shooting, 2 of 4 from 3 as well. But Anthony Edwards, in a game that contained the best player in the world, it was decided today MVP of the league, in Nikola Jokic. In a game that had that guy, our guy was better than him, undoubtedly. He went for 32 points, a lot of points, but on 11 of 25 shooting, not that efficient, made 2 of 9 from 3s, shot a lot of 3s, and we're honestly okay with him shooting a lot of 3s because a lot of those are kind of step back over a Rudy, over a Cat, and it's crazy that he makes some of them, but he doesn't make a super high percentage than, you know, it's different than an open 3 from a sharpshooter is what I'm saying. 9 assists and 8 rebounds, so he had a good game, but he was not Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards was a killer, an absolute dog in that game, and he's the reason we won. I have a lot of notes. I have more notes for game 2, to be fair. But there was the only moment, I guess, I don't know. Most of the game, it felt like we were better. There was one moment where I was like, okay, this is it. This is the moment where we lose. And it was Cat, 2 personal fouls back-to-back, almost like probably less than 2 minutes apart. So you bring him from 3 to 4 to 5 fouls with like 8 minutes left in the game. And he had to go out, and I was like, if we lose this game, it's absolutely 100% because Cat can't foul or can't stop fouling, which has been something that he has dealt with, that he has struggled with his entire career. Anthony Edwards calls it out in press conferences, calls it out to his face on the court because that's our fucking guy. But it was so clear in this game, in that fourth quarter, like, this is exactly what we talk. He just can't help himself. And it even happened a couple times 2 nights ago as well. Obviously didn't affect it that much. And so I wrote down, shot my shot, if we lose this game, it's because Cat was fouling. Didn't happen. We won the game, obviously. Anthony Edwards, just the, like, a true 3-level scorer at like an elite level at all levels. So he can bang the 3 as good as anybody. He can really, really get to the rim. Maybe one of the best in the league at getting to the rim. But then the mid-range was just killing them. And there's not a lot of guys that have a mid-range game at such an elite level in this league anymore, the way that Ant does. The turnarounds, the little Kobe shots, the jump so high in the air while you're turning that you're kind of floating and eventually you kind of square your shoulders to the basket at the very end of your jump and then just swish a shot. Like, those just, like, it's almost the point where it's like, this is a bad shot and I know it's going in. And that's how it sort of felt in the fourth quarter against this Nuggets team in game 1. Naz Reid obviously came in after the Cat fouls. 10 straight points by himself, banked in a 3, I think made another 3, had a little bit of a drive to the basket. I feel like there's a chance that I don't talk about Naz Reid enough on this podcast. I think the regular, like, when I've talked about the Wolves all year, like, the people I talk about are Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert. Because to me, those 3 are the most important, and like, obviously that's true. We talk about Jaden McDaniels a fair bit because I like what he does on defense, and obviously anything you get from him on offense is a huge plus and helps the team a lot. That hasn't really been happening this series. But anyway, I just feel like I've been doing Naz Reid a little bit wrong by not talking about him as much. Obviously, he's like a whole meme thing, and you just say his name, and everybody creams their pants, which is great. I love that. I'm not saying I don't love that. But this is me giving respect to Naz Reid because he's been huge in both these games. Was absolutely crucial in game 1, getting that victory. And, I mean, he's had the best season of his career, which isn't, you know, a shock to say. It's not controversial in any means, but him being as good as he has been this year allows just a little bit of flexibility when Cat is inconsistent. Because that's something that And not that Cat was bad in this game, but like the fouls, for example, is a moment where we had bad Cat for a moment. And then our guy Nas just hopped in, scored 10 straight points. There's no issue. We eventually brought Cat back on the court, which I, you know, wasn't necessarily in favor of at the time. But Mike Inouye knows better than I do. He's been doing a great job. I mean, some of the best playoff performances from this team ever. So I don't know. From an interim coach, kind of impressive. But yeah, respect to Naz Reid. I wrote this on the end of game one, after the game is over. It almost felt like a sin writing it. I was like, this is what I wrote in the notes. I wrote, Jokic looked frazzled for the first time ever. And I was like, surely he didn't. Because everything you hear about Jokic, they talk online, and obviously we've all watched it in the games too, is like, he's always in control. He always goes at his own pace. He always sees the game through like such an intelligent lens, and always makes the right play. That is who Jokic is as a player, and it almost felt wrong to write that didn't happen for once, but it didn't happen in game one, and then it really, really didn't happen in game two. And obviously we're onto something, which is great. But I think it's a good transition into game two. Obviously the Rudy thing was really hot in the media going into this game. It's like, is he going to make it? Is he not? We got people claiming to be his pilot, saying he's going to get there safe on X.com, but then he actually didn't get there at all. Maybe because there was a storm, because he didn't leave on time, whatever. He didn't play. I was worried. I was really worried I was worried that we'd get killed, Loki. At their place, we just took one from them without the defensive player of the year decided yesterday. I was worried that we'd get killed, and it would kind of kill any momentum that we had from game one, even though we were going home with home court advantage secured. That obviously didn't happen. Again, I don't have the score here because I didn't write it in my notes because I'm an idiot. But 106-80, we scored the exact same points both games. They scored 19 less in the second game, 19 fewer, my apologies. Without Rudy Gobert, we held the defending champions with the MVP to 80 points in a playoff game that they absolutely had to have in their building. It was, I mean, people have been talking about it online, like, so I'm not saying anything new. It was one of the best defensive performances I've ever seen from an NBA team. And the Timberwolves have had one of the best seasons defensively any NBA team has ever had. So I guess that's maybe not a surprise. But it kind of always felt like there was levels to this postseason and that Denver was another level. And that's how it was talked about in the sort of national media as a whole. It's like Denver's the team to beat. And this type of thing where I said it on here, I was like, I don't think that Denver's significantly better than us. And the way these first two games go, they feel like they're significantly worse. Now, things like game two happen sometimes, and did we kick the absolute shit out of them? Yes. Does it mean that we're going to sail smoothly through the rest of the series? Probably not. Sometimes outlier games happens and teams get completely railed, and then they come back and play better the next game. That happens. There was the Golden State, the Cleveland Cavs Golden State series when the Cavs won in 2016, the best finals ever, in my opinion, because my King Legote brought it home for the boys. In that series, like, the first four games of that series were blowouts. It was two blowouts in Golden State, one blowout in Cleveland, and then they blew us out. I said us as a Cleveland Cavaliers. But the Warriors blew Cleveland out in game four, I believe, in their place, and that was the 3-1 lead that we came back from, all that stuff. Again, said we, I gotta watch that shit. So it's very possible for a team to be blown out and then also blow out a team. Because I think the Cavs blew out the Warriors then in game five. It's just blowout after blowout after blowout. It's very possible to... Like, I guess what I'm saying is it's possible that we drop one at home to the Nuggets in the next, like, couple days here. Like, that is in the realm of possibility. The series is not finished. All of that being said, judging by the first two games, there isn't a doubt who's the better team in the series. There isn't a doubt on who the best team in the NBA is if you go by the last two games. Switching, I watched the Mavericks and the Thunder game last night, and I don't want to get ahead of myself because we'll probably have to, if we win the series, knock on wood, blah, 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 we'll have to play the Thunder probably, and that'll be a good series. But watching the Mavericks play the Thunder, it was like, it wasn't like watching an NCAA team. Like, that's obviously an exaggeration. Like, quality basketball was much better than that. But it was like switching from a Big East, Big 12, top 25 matchup to a A-10 matchup. Or, like it's a college basketball Sunday. There's a big Big East matchup on at 7 p.m., and that was the Wolves-Nuggets game. And then when that game is over, you get, like, what's the name of the WCC game where Gonzaga just kicks the shit out of somebody? That's what it felt like, the quality basketball difference between the Nuggets and Wolves and the Thunder and Mavs. It was just different. And then even watching on the Eastern Conference teams are fucking dog shit except for the Celtics, compared to, like, what we've seen from the Wolves. Now, I understand I'm getting ahead of myself, so, like, this is all just based on the observations of the past week. It's, like, how it feels, and we could regress, other teams could figure it out, whatever. But that's just how it feels. I'll just go through some of the notes, and then we'll talk about a little bit more of where we're at. Game two, first note, I'm nervous. I had a bit of a thought that I think Rudy should have showed up and played. I know that, like, I'll get crucified in the streets for having that thought because, like, a son is more important, blah, blah, blah. Just, like, there's a very big difference between 2-0 and 1-1. And if you can help your team get to 2-0, then, like, we're talking legacy shit here. Because, I don't know. Whatever. And your son's going to be there. But... Again, I think, you know, I'm willing to, like, accept the fact that I might be wrong in that take, but I think Rudy should have been there. It didn't end up mattering, so my take is even worse, but I think he should have been there. I wrote early, Denver doesn't look as dynamic as he's supposed to. If Cassidy's out of trouble, foul trouble, we have a chance. We had more than a chance, obviously. I said I'm okay with Kyle Anderson never shooting the basketball again. He was actually pretty decent. I was shockingly good on defense, actually. Ant loves seeing Aaron Gordon. Ant cooks Aaron Gordon. One of the, like, dagger baskets in game one, the one that was all over highlight pages and shit like that, on the right sort of wing, where he, like, shook him out of his shoes and then made a tough mid-range, like, that was over Aaron Gordon. Also, there's a couple different possessions, even some back-to-back, where it's just like, all right, and on Aaron Gordon, he knows what he wants, and he's driving to the hole, making a layup, getting a dunk, whatever. Just eating Aaron Gordon for breakfast. It's too slow. We have to talk about the Nuggets being so unbelievably rattled. Michael Malone, like, before it got out of hand, almost punched a ref, didn't get a tech. And then from that moment on, the Wolves just continued to dominate and the Nuggets just continued to get more and more and more rattled. Obviously, Jamal Murray threw multiple items onto the court. I'm not going to act like that's some kind of felony, but you should almost get suspended for acting like a child loser little bitch more than you should get suspended for, like, that was dangerous in this case. Like, I think he should have been suspended because, like, are you an adult or are you not? Because, like, you're sitting on the bench throwing heating packs at another grown man because he didn't call the game in your direction, which, by the way, you're sucking anyway, and you're also down by 30 points in the second quarter. Like, that is what we're talking about here. Not any kind of danger. It's like, you should be punished because you're acting like an idiot, not because of some imagined danger or whatever. I'm okay with him not getting suspended. We'll kick his ass anyway because he's been playing like shit this entire series. He is a little injured, so I guess that's an excuse for him. But he was just so bad in this game and complained constantly. And like, they were actually getting real upset at the refs down 27 with 5 minutes to go in the half. In the first half. It was like, if you got every call that you've been complaining about, you'd be down 10, you know? Like, that's not why you're losing. It's because you can't score. Jokic was bad again. Anthony Edwards was really, really good. Karl Anthony Towns was really, really good. And almost had, like, a sneaky game where you're like, he hasn't actually been scoring that much, and then you look up and he's got 25 points. I think he had 27. Another big Naz Reid game. Nikhil Alexander-Walker made 4 threes. It just, shots kept going down, and I kept slowly believing more and more and more, and it was awesome. It was an awesome feeling. Other notes. Ant made Reggie Jackson fall and pointed at him. That wails. That's a note I had. That did wail. They defend the pick and roll right now so well, or Denver hasn't figured it out, or something. I'm gonna sort of dip my toe into, like, trying to be smart about basketball here when I'm probably not really that, but it seemed like on multiple pick and rolls, first of all, they don't automatically switch like every other team in the NBA. So thank fucking God they don't do that, because that's really annoying if you're, like, wanting a team to be good, to see them just switch on everything. So they fight hard over the screen. That's the big Alexander Walker territory, big Jaden McDaniels sort of job, is just to fight over that screen. So then, usually, right, even though they're fighting hard over the screen, like, the ball handler will get past it. In this case, maybe it's Jamal Murray, maybe it's Reggie Jackson, whatever. We'll get a shoulder on the guy, and then right as he's sort of starting the drive to the hoop, even before the big can either roll or pop, somebody that's on the, like, the weak side, guy that's on the perimeter, whatever, like, jumps in front of the ball handler right away. It's like, in the ball handler's mind, it's like, all right, screen coming, I'm going to get around, he's fighting over, I'm going to get around it anyway. All right, cleared the screen. And then before he can even think one thing more, somebody that was covering somebody completely out of the action is, like, on him, stealing the ball. And that happened, like, a couple different times. The big Ant, like, dunk and then flex in front of the crowd when everybody's pissed off, when he got, like, a wide-open dunk when nobody was even in that side of the court. Like, that was that type of thing. Mike Conley hopped off this guy on the perimeter, just completely jumped the ball handler's bones. That sounded like a sex thing, not a sex thing. And then, like, threw the outlet pass and, like, turned around and flexed in the opposite direction. It was fucking sick. And there was a couple of times where they did shit like that on pick and rolls that is just, like, really hard to do. And it's before Jokic could even, like, get into the play, because he's usually setting the screen and then the ball is going to come back to him in some kind of fashion and he'll make something cool happen with it. But even before, like, he could roll, because he isn't the fastest, right? Like, they already lost the ball. And it's just like, we jump on them right away. Jokic doesn't even have a chance to get into the play because the ball is already turned over by somebody else. Also, Jokic had a lot of turnovers in both these games. I was a little worried in the second half. I sort of talked to myself. This is a Minnesota sports thing where no matter how good things are going, you gotta think that it's going to go bad soon. I got a little freaked out when they kind of made the deficit up by 10 points. It was like down to 19 at one point. I did write in the notes, like, how we play the second half says a lot about us as a team. I think we kind of passed that test because we did lose the lead to 19 at one point, and then we got it back up to, like, 26 by the time Luka Garza and all the boys came in. So I think we kind of passed that. We didn't give up that much. It's fine. they got a little bit of success with, like, a full court press. I don't think that they'll be able to go to that for the entire game, if for only reason that they don't really do it that often, and so they'll just can't keep it up for an entire game. Also, Jokic being, like, the anchor defender in the paint after all of that, like, when the ball gets through all the press part, Jokic being the defender, that you then, like, the last thing between you and the basket, it's not going to work well for them, I don't think, in any sort of consistent basis. Yeah, let me see if there's other notes. But, like, I guess that means, like, I'm not super worried about them, like, finding something in the second half that then they could use in the future games. I don't think that happened. I wrote Ant not shooting that great. Really good at getting to the hole. That's just what I saw. I don't really know if that actually was true. He shot badly from three, but it was 11-17 from the field otherwise. He just had so many layups in this game. And not all of them were easy. Not all of them were even bad defense, but he's really good at getting to the paint. And it sort of seemed like he sensed, like, hey, I'm not banging some of these outside shots. Let's just get to the hole and keep going to the hole or get fouled, you know. And it worked really well. On it, in a game where all we did was put pressure on them, him just consistently getting into the paint, getting to the basket, was just even more pressure that we're putting on them. So that's fun to see. All of this is to say, I'm believing more. I'm at the point where I will be hurt if we don't win the title. I'm at that point. I haven't really been at that point with the Minnesota sports team since the Minnesota Miracle. The day of the Minnesota Miracle was one of my favorite sports days ever in my entire life. And it's probably true for most of us. And after that, I was like, the Vikings are going to the fucking Super Bowl. The next week, I was in New Zealand. I watched, like, the first touchdown drive in a bar in New Zealand, and then I had to go to the airport with no Wi-Fi in a bus. And by the time I got to the airport, we were getting absolutely shat on. That was, like, one of the worst sports days of my life. Probably one of, like, the more depressed days in general. And I was in New Zealand getting ready to fly to Australia. So my life didn't suck at that time, I'll be real. But, like, that killed us. That killed my day and kind of the rest of the week. I'm at that point where I believe in this team the way that I believed in that team. And I'm a little afraid of getting hurt. Because, I mean, I'm not afraid of getting, whatever, who gives a shit? Like, we're going to win the fucking NBA Finals, knock on wood. That's not a jinx. but I'm at that point where, you know, I'm all in. And I haven't been all in since 2017 or 2018, I guess it was. That just had turned 2018. Like, for example, I've never been all in on the Twins. Even when we have a good team going to the playoffs, it just, you need to see some success in the play. Like, I've never been all in on the, I've been all in on the Vikings twice. The Brett Favre year and then the Minnesota Miracle year, and that's it. Never even been close to being all in on the Timberwolves the way I am right now. So I'm scared, you know? I'm starting to believe that this might be the one, and I don't want to, you know, I've already probably said too much, and I don't want to put that out in the world, but, like, other people are saying it online. You know, national pundits have identified us as one of the real contenders. So we'll see. We'll see. Any other notes? No. I'm going to go quickly over the NBA playoffs in general, because they are sort of the big sporting event happening right now. Sports calendar works kind of like March Madness ends, and then you get kind of the draft, and you get the Masters, and I guess the Masters happened And the Masters happened after March Madness. But then once the draft and the Masters are over, then, like, the main sports thing is NBA playoffs, and if you're into hockey, NHL playoffs. So I'll just go over every series, you know, real quick and see what's up. NBA playoffs bracket. All right. So in the West, which is the conference we're in, Thunder beat the Pelicans. That's not a surprise, not a test. Much easier test than ours. We were talking shit about the Suns. Maybe it wasn't a Suns thing. Maybe we're just good. But the Thunder do look to be good. They definitely took care of business in the against the Mavericks. For whatever reason, I just don't believe in that team as much as I believe in us. Knock on wood. Other first round series, Clippers, Mavericks. Clippers went out sad again. I'm done with Kawhi Leonard. I'm done with him. I know he played a little bit in this series, but sometimes he didn't. Like, I think that if you think Kawhi Leonard is a top player in the NBA right now, I think you're dumb, because he doesn't play and his teams never have success. So how can he be really all that good? It's like saying Juwan Duran is one of the best players in the NBA, in MLB. Like, yeah, he is, but he's really good. And when he's on the field, he's really good. But he's on the field such a fraction of the time than everybody else is that you just can't go and say that. You know? He's played, like, 4 innings all year. And if he was healthy, he would have played, like, 18 innings all year. Not 18 games, 18 innings. But anyway. And that was Duran for the example. Like, Kawhi plays a little bit more than that, but he's always injured. He's never on the court. Like, calling him anything other than, like, a part-time player that's pretty good is, like, glazing him more than he needs to be glazed. But anyway, that Clippers team is just a mess. Just kind of an example of what worked in the NBA 5 years ago, and or even, like, maybe even before the Warriors, because the Warriors were kind of homegrown, where it's just like, let's get a bunch of stars together and see what they can do. It hasn't really turned into a championship team. I mean, the Suns are this way too. It hasn't turned into a championship team in a while. I guess you could say the Lakers were kind of like that when they won the title in the bubble, but even then it was the best player in the world plus Anthony Davis, who's pretty good. So you have two stars, but then all the pieces around them were very sort of homegrown and, you know, had a role and played their role, et cetera. Like, just compiling stars. Maybe unless you have the one star, maybe unless you have LeBron, and maybe at this point it's Giannis or Jokic, but, like, the Nuggets are a cohesive unit that grew up together. The Warriors were that for all their championships. You know, I guess Toronto had their one star with Kawhi, it worked with them, but I don't think it works in the NBA anymore to just kind of have stars, especially aging ones like Kawhi and Harden. But also, if you take out, like, I know this is stupid, but if you take out the one Raptors title from Kawhi's, like, resume, it is a completely different player that you're talking about. And that was only 1 year of his career, right? Other than that, he hasn't really been healthy ever. And anyway, I've talked about the Clippers far too much. Obviously, we talked about Timberwolves, Suns, Nuggets, Lakers. There was a lot of talk in the national media about the Lakers and how they were, like, next up and going to be good anyway. If that was true, why were they a 7th seed? You know, why were they in the play-in? I'm kind of sick of the Lakers, like, sucking in the regular season, and then for some reason everybody acts like they're going to be good in the playoffs. Last year I kind of believed it a little bit. Like, and it kind of happened a little bit, but they were always going to be swept by the Nuggets. They were always going to be swept by the Nuggets this year. Except they didn't. They won one game. Never mind. I do think knowing what the Timberwolves have kind of exposed about the Nuggets now, that's even more true that the Lakers just weren't that good. Celtics and the Heat, nothing surprising. There are almost really nothing to talk about. The Heat without Jimmy Butler, no Magic left, no juice really. Celtics are a really, really good team. Cavaliers and Magic, this one went 7, and I watched none of the games because they're on NBA TV. This is what I'm talking about when I say, the Timberwolves and even the Nuggets, who got shit on by the Timberwolves for 2 straight games, are at a completely different level than other teams in the playoffs. Watching a Cavaliers Magic game or, highlights from that, it's like the players we're talking about are Darius Garland, who can't defend a walking stick. The Magic went 7 games relying heavily on Franz Wagner. What are we doing here? It's just a completely different sort of side of things in the Eastern Conference that we don't get the luxury of dealing with. Bucks Pacers is sad just because Giannis got hurt, so you never really know. I'm kind of becoming a Dame Lillard hater. I just don't think he's a very good player anymore. As good as he is offensively, he's just such a liability on the other end, and he can't really move. So I think I'm kind of out on Dame. Knicks Sixers was good. I watched a few of these games. Joel Embiid needs to... I don't really know what the answer is. He's so good, but he is never there and never healthy. And I think that's almost like a fatal flaw for the Sixers iteration. Is that the player that you rely on to get into the position you need to get into in the regular season is just never going to be there for you in that same capacity in the postseason. As good as he may be, he just kind of dies at the end of every game. Or literally breaks shit in his body and then can't play anymore. And I think it says more about the Sixers that they lost the series than it does about the Knicks. Speaking of the Knicks are hot right now and hot in the streets. Everybody wants to talk about they're from New York, whatever. I think I'm a little bit maybe I should have been tuning into Knicks basketball all year, but obviously Jalen Brunson came out of nowhere to become a superstar level player. And that's really impressive. He just makes shots at such a high rate, knows the game really, really well, can get anywhere he wants to on the court. Feels a little bit he's not the passer that Nash was, but in terms of zero percentile size wise, athlete, bottom 10% athlete in the league in terms of NBA body, but then just being really good at the game and being able to control it in such a way. I guess Chris Paul might be a better fit, but he scores more than Chris Paul ever did. And it's not a Derrick Rose comparison either, right, as a scoring point guard, because Derrick Rose could jump out of the gym and was hyper athletic and all that stuff. There's a good comp in there somewhere, but maybe there isn't because people didn't sort of see it coming. They didn't see it from him at all because maybe it's just never been done before. Just kind of gets wherever he wants to, makes shots at an insanely high clip when it seems like he should be easy to defend. I don't know. That's not even the thing that I want to talk about. I don't know when Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo started getting good. I Julius Randle is not healthy for any of these games. He hasn't been healthy. And that's who we went into this season thinking their star was, right? It was Julius Randle, and he just hasn't been there. Isaiah Hartenstein is a really, really damn good player in the playoffs. Dante DiVincenzo is all of a sudden kind of a star. Definitely not a superstar, but would you say he's a star? He's making huge shots for a second seed team, who's about to go up 2-0 probably in the second round. Josh Hart has kind of always been the, I try harder than everybody else guy, and then I also make shots here and there, which is what he's doing now, but at an even higher level than ever before. I just don't really know where some of these players came from, and that's kind of weird. Because, like, Dante DiVincenzo especially was, like, an average role player on, like, some pretty decent teams for most of his career, like, his entire career to this point, and now all of a sudden is, like, the third option on this team, maybe, offensively, on, like, a good playoff team. I don't know. I keep thinking they're going to lose, even to the Pacers, and then they just don't. Speaking of teams that don't play defense, the Pacers, this game is set. 91-99 or something like that going into 99-91 going into the fourth quarter. Can't imagine what it's like cheering for a team that doesn't play good defense. Couldn't be me. That's it. That's my take on the NBA playoffs. Let's check in on the NHL playoffs. They're still happening. All right, that was our NHL playoff check-in. I actually did watch some NHL. I watched the end of the Maple Leafs-Bruins Game 7. It was actually fire. I don't know why I don't watch more hockey, because it's actually entertaining every time. I usually watch, like, one game every playoffs, and that's kind of it. Which is weird, because I don't know if anybody actually knows this, but... like, my favorite sport growing up was hockey. Like, when I was super young, I was, like, 5 years old, I always say, like, baseball was the sport I loved first. Like, that's not even true. Like, hockey was my favorite sport when I was, like, 4 or 5 years old. I, like, wanted to be an NHL player. And then, like, NHL was, like, everybody wants to be a professional athlete when they grow up, right? But, like, specifically for me, I wanted to be an NHL player. And then I just ended up not liking the sport, which makes no sense. Like, I don't know how that happened. Maybe it just wasn't on. My dad didn't watch it. I don't know. Also, I, like, found out that you had to learn how to skate, and I didn't know how to skate at the time. So I just, like, kind of gave up from there, which is crazy because, like, you know, I was 5 years old, could have learned how to skate. Literally had, like, lessons in school about learning how to skate, but I just gave up right away because I didn't know how to do it when I was 5 years old, which is crazy. Not great in the mental fortitude there for your boy. But, yeah, weird that I don't actually watch hockey because I like it. I enjoy when it's on, but I don't know. I never got into it. Anyway, let me just make sure there's no more notes about either... the NHL, definitely not that. About the Wolves or the... anyway, okay, all right, we're good. Twins. The win streak ended at 12. But what a win streak it was. And still a winning week for the Twins. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But we are now up to 20-15. 3 games back. Obviously started the win streak in fourth place. We're now in third place, so not much better. But we were at second place like a day ago. We're still only 1 game back from Kansas City. By the way, the fact that Cleveland and Kansas City are so good this year, like, what the fuck? What is that? Feels like a fluke. Feels like all of the Central is not going to be the way it is by the time we get to meaningful baseball in the fall. But for right now, we got to keep winning games. Keep winning games, hopefully. Twins are currently up a run on the Mariners. 4-3 in the eighth. Is it a Duran moment? We lost the game last night because Duran and Jax, we were just like, Rocco decided that it was not a Duran or Jax night because they had been working too much or whatever. They're tired. But... and that's, like, literally what lost us the game because we put Jay Jackson in there and Cody Funderburk and we got shat on and whatever. But not Cody Funderburk last night. That was a lie. Steven Okert allowed a big – it was Alcala, actually. There it is. Found it. Anyway, still winning week. Swept the White Sox again since the last pod. I think I was literally recording the game or recording the pod during the first game of that series, and cut the pot off before we went to the ninth inning, which we won that game, so good. Duran returned to that series. He's since pitched 4 innings, 7 Ks, no runs allowed, 2 for 2 in save opportunities. Hopefully has another one tonight that he bangs. Game-winning RBIs from Kepler and Kepler in game 1 and 2. In close games against the White Sox, it's good to win close games even against shitty teams. Build in that habit. Kepler has been absolutely mashing the ball. Over 400 this week. He was injured at the beginning of the year or whatever. Since rejoining the lineup a week and a half ago or so, he's hitting over 400, and we've lost like one game, well, I guess two after last night. But, and he's still really, really good in the outfield. So all the Kepler slander that has happened on the spot at times, mostly last year, he's kind of proved us wrong. So credit to Max Kepler for that. Then we took 2 or 3 from the Red Sox. This was the game that Cody Funderburk that lost, the first loss, the loss that the 13th game that ended the losing streak or the winning streak. Funderburk allowed like 5 in an inning and didn't even get out of it and shit like that, and that's why we lost. It was like 9-2. And then we took one from Seattle on Monday. 3-1 close game again. Lost last night because of the bullpen, and then we're closing in on a dub hopefully here tonight. I can't watch the game. I could have it in on a legal stream, I guess. I could pull it up, which is what I do usually when I watch them. excuse me. I usually can't watch the game because, you know, I can't get Bally streaming, but also now nobody else can watch the game. So we'll get to that in a moment, but let's talk about some sort of Twin stats as well. Mentioned Kepler hitting over 400 for the week since he's been back. Just really good to see. Two other people that we maybe didn't expect to be contributing to this particular team in the way that they're contributing. Larnick has been batting .354, so I'm reading a slash line here, so average on base and slugging. Sort of a comprehensive look. So Trevor Larnick has been batting .354 average, .407 on base, .521 slugging, for a OPS in the 900s, which is very impressive, .928, and that is in 15 games since he's been brought up. He kind of replaced Matt Wallner, if you remember. And on the other side of things, Miranda's slashing .299, .338, .478. So also very, very good. I guess very good, maybe it's a bit of a stretch. I would say he's very good, not great. Larnick has been great. Miranda's been very good, and he was very, very not good last year. So those two specifically have been very surprising. I think going into last year, the assumption was Miranda's going to play a lot of third base. Larnick's going to be the fourth outfielder but get a lot of looks at DH. And when Buxton's hurt, we're going to move somebody over to center, and he's going to play left field. I think that was sort of the assumption, because Larnick can hit at an MLB level, we've seen in the past. It's maybe a little bit streaky, but Miranda was sort of locked in at third base eventually. And that was maybe going to change when Royce got healthy, all this stuff. But going into this season, And by the way, 2 years ago, neither of those things worked out. Larnick wasn't very good. Miranda wasn't very good. Both kind of got sent down, played a lot, and St. Paul. Going into this season, on the other hand, the expectation was Royce Lewis is going to be, an all-star. He's going to start the first of maybe hopefully 10 years of all-star play at third base for us. That was the hope. And maybe he'd switch to shortstop eventually once Correa leaves. And then left field would be Matt Wallner, striking out a lot but hitting a lot of pumps, driving in a lot of runs, maybe bat him fifth or sixth and just get a lot, live with the homers and sort of accept the strikeouts. So that was maybe the expectation going into this year. Obviously, that didn't happen. Royce Lewis gets injured game one. Hopefully, he'll be back sooner rather than later. And then Matt Wallner was one of like the worst hitters in baseball for the first 2-3 weeks of the season before he got sent down, batting in like the 70s or something. Like, so didn't even make it to 100, I don't think. And so then Jose Miranda and Trevor Larnach, who were supposed to be really big pieces of last year's team but disappointed, all of a sudden randomly like really key contributors to this year's team through a couple weeks each for both of them. It's an interesting thing to monitor going forward, see if it continues that way. By the way, Carlos Santana can't stop hitting homers all of a sudden, which is great because he had a horrible first couple weeks. And Ryan Jeffers is just continuing to piss on the ball. So credit to him. I saw a stat and I should have saved it and written it in the notes. Since we traded Mitch Garver or something like that. Did we trade him or did we let him walk? I don't remember. I don't know ball. But since Mitch Garver ended up on the Texas Rangers, who obviously won a World Series, so they're not exactly complaining. But since that happened, Ryan Jeffers is the best hitting catcher in the majors by like OPS plus or something like that, which I couldn't actually tell you what OPS plus means. I'll look into that and let you know next week maybe. Let's just look it up right now. This is my podcast, I can do what I want. OPS. And the funny thing is I don't even know if that was the stat that was in the tweet, but let's say it was. Takes an on-base sluggings percentage and normalizes the number across the entire league. It counts for external factors like ballparks. How do they do that? It then adjusts so a score of 100 is league average and 150 is like really good and 50 is really bad. Okay. Interesting. So it has to do with ballparks. I don't know how they figure that one out, but whatever. Could be fake. Not fake. It's definitely not fake. But anyway, Ryan Jeffers has been better than Mitch Garver and every other catcher in a stat similar to that since we got rid of Garver. So that's about a perfect, like, best-case scenario for us. Let's check in with the pitching staff because I talk about the hitting a lot here. And for good reason because it was really bad in the first 2 weeks. But starting rotation, Lopez is at 4.30 in the ERA. A little bit high. He's had a lot of like, I'm going to go 5 innings and allow 4 runs type of shit. Or like go 5 and allow 3. And it's just like, well, that was okay. And like we're in this game, but it wasn't sort of the ace stuff that we remember, you know, from the playoffs last year or from last year in general. I think it'll be fine though. Like the velocity isn't down. Like there's no real difference with the stuff. I think it's sort of a small sample size and he'll be, you know, in a good spot by the time we need him to be. Ryan has been great, under 4 in the ERA. So the inconsistency of last fall doesn't seem to be there this year. So that's been awesome. Ober and Paddock both had really bad starts to like begin the season, but have been kind of nails since then. Both pitched really, really well over their opportunities in the winning streak, so feel good there. ERAs are both in the 4s, mostly because of those kind of like, I allowed 6 runs in 4 innings at the beginning of the year type of shit. If you haven't been paying attention, Louis Varland is no longer with the team. He's now in St. Paul because he was consistently pitching badly, whereas the other guys only did at the beginning of the year. He's been replaced by Simeon Woods Richardson, who has been a very, very good option as like the 5th starter right now. He has the best ERA on the staff or on the rotation at least. Which is, let me find it. I wrote it down for everybody else. I don't know why I wouldn't have written it down for him because I know it's the best. 174 in 20 innings pitched in 4 in four outings. So he's, you know, not he's not going late into games necessarily, but he's averaging, you know, about five innings a game. I think he did even have one where he went seven innings and only allowed one run and stuff like that. But that also means that then in some games he's coming out after three or four innings, just where he's at in the lineup. But he hasn't been allowing runs. He's been really good, at least starting games, you know, maybe not going all that deep, but it's been good to find that and see that. I saw a couple tweets that made me feel a little bit bad about how he's maybe like underlying numbers aren't like as impressive and that maybe he's getting a little lucky, but like hopefully that's the type of thing that, you know, isn't actually true. But bullpen is still pretty good. Jay Jackson hasn't been great. He might be gone soon or might be in St. Paul soon. Funderburk is another, feels like he is a St. Paul guy to me. But other than that, Cole Sands has been great at kind of out of nowhere. Cole Sands was a guy that was really good in Wichita a couple of years ago. Wasn't ever that great or ever that consistent in St. Paul. Like last year and the year before, and really was bad in a few opportunities for the Twins last year, but kind of shockingly has been solid as a sort of low to mid leverage reliever, maybe take a couple innings at a time. He was a starter in the minors primarily, so I think that's probably why he's ended up struggling. Maybe it's better that he's more fitted for the bullpen, but certainly seems that way at least, because he's been a shockingly really solid piece. Griffin Jacks has, we've been using him like a dog, 17 appearances, 2.40 ERA, under three is always great to see. He's been our closer while Duran was gone. Also, Brock Stewart, 13 innings, has allowed one run. So we've got a good two, three, four. Well, we got, I mean, if you go Duran, Stewart, Jax, that's three really dependable relievers that I feel good about every time they go on the field. If we throw in Cole Sands, that's all of a sudden, you know, three and a half guys that we really trust. Steven Okert is okay. Maybe four guys that we really trust, which think about most of the time. Last year we had one and a half with Duran going out there all the time and a really young and kind of inexperienced Griffin Jacks being also pretty good before Brock Stewart showed up, that is. But yeah, so that's still been good. This is all really great, and the Twins seem like they're in a good spot and are moving up the standings, but nobody can watch them, so does it even matter? Obviously, Bally Sports sucks. Everybody hates Bally Sports. It's kind of been a thing since we switched over from Fox Sports to Bally Sports, is that everybody just kind of hates it. It sucks even more now, because now just nobody can watch the games. I saw the sort of news. I live in Miami, so I can watch the games anyway, but I saw the news sort of hit that they were cutting all their Comcast like channels that nobody can see on Comcast. But then it also is on Xfinity, and then also my dad, who has Sparklight, can't watch them. So it's just seemingly everybody can't watch them. It was a really, really good time for Dick Bremer to leave when he did. I sort of believe more and more that it wasn't like a he's being pushed out situation. It's more of a he sees what's coming and does not want to be involved with it situation, which may or may not be all that different from being pushed out. But I think he's probably glad of the decision he made, because nobody's like listening to Corey Provis and Justin Morneau, because nobody's watching. Nobody can watch the games unless you have on MLB TV and you don't live in the region. I've heard that Fubo TV might be okay too. I've never tried it. I know that Fubo TV comes up whenever you go on like a illegal streaming site and you click the ad to make it go away. It always opens up Fubo TV and a couple other sites, but Fubo, so it feels kind of fake and sketchy in that way. Yeah, that's my take. Bally sucks. and I'm getting a phone call. I'm going to decline that. All right, that's Quinn's talk. New segment. This is either part of the post game or it's before the post game. I don't really know. New segment is You Don't Know Ball Take of the Week. Sort of started this last week on accident when I said you don't know ball if you think that the Falcons did the right thing by drafting Michael Penis. Bringing it back this week because I have another You Don't Know Ball Take of the Week. And basically the idea is that if you come to me with this take, then that like tells me all I need to know. I know that you don't know ball at that point. And so then I'm going to move on from that situation and just assuming for the rest of my life that and your life that you don't know ball. And so like one example of this would be like when Goose Mope said that LeBron sucks because his foot was on the line when he made a would-be game-tying three against the Wolves earlier this year, but his foot was on the line, so now he sucks. Like, that would be a good example of you don't know ball take of the week. Anyway, a lot of talk over the last few days on the internet about whether an NBA player could play in the NFL easier or whether an NFL player could play in the NBA easier. First of all, if you are somebody who is even, I guess I'm doing it right now, like taking this debate seriously or like you give a shit about this debate, then you probably don't know ball, which I guess means I don't know ball, but whatever. I guess I'm biting on the bait here. If you think that the NFL would have an easier time playing in the NBA than vice versa, you don't know ball. And there's not like an argument to be had. There's not like a, if this happens, there's not like it's just you don't actually know what you're talking about. And that is why anybody with that opinion gets the You Don't Know Ball Take of the Week award this week. I'm not going to like go in depth into this argument because it's mostly stupid, but the average height in the NBA is 6'8". Most NFL players like kind of seem to top out at 6'5", I guess, would be tall for the NFL. There's some, I think Lane Johnson is 6'7". But I guess like just body wise, it doesn't make sense. The tallest people in the NFL are all big and 300 pounds, right? And those are your linemen. Like Lane Johnson is probably the closest thing you get to NBA height in the NFL, and he's 300 pounds, and he's 6'7". You know who else is 6'7" in the NBA? Like fucking Nikhil Alexander Walker. He's a fucking guard. You're gonna be 300 pounds playing guard? No, you're not. Jaden McDaniels is 6'9". Anyway, so that just like body wise, it doesn't make sense. The only people that would have a chance are people who are tall and quick and could play point guard. But the amount of skill that you have to have in the NBA to play on the perimeter is just insane. And there's no room for somebody who is just a good athlete and average height in the NBA. There's no room for it whatsoever at all. You have to be insanely skilled in a very specific sport that football skills do not translate to at all. On the other side, almost all NBA players would be a disaster in the NFL. That's very true. So if you think it could easily happen, you're wrong. But if you are a really, 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 really good athlete in the NBA, which there are many, and you're pretty quick and you can move well and you're strong, which there are many of those too, you would have a chance to make an NFL roster as like a special teamer or like maybe like a receiver or something or like a running back, you know? Like, for example, Anthony Edwards is about 6'2", if I remember. Let me look this up. Anthony Edwards, I think he's 6'2". Show me his 6'4". Okay, 6'4". Like 6'4", 225, right? So he is relatively small for the NBA. But if you threw a guy like that, and he's an elite athlete, can jump out of the gym, can run with anybody, can change direction really quickly. 6'4", 225 is like a big receiver in the NFL. And I could imagine a world in which somebody like Anthony Edwards, who is an incredible athlete, could at least kind of have a chance to figure it out. And anybody who played in like football is going to be like, oh no, like there's so much nuance to blah, 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 blah. Like, why did Tim Tebow switch to tight end? You know, like, why did the Vikings draft a German who had played rugby a bunch and were like, yeah, this guy's the guy, you know, like it, every year there's kind of like a guy who played rugby and maybe we'll teach him tight end and shit like that. Like, that shit does not happen in the NBA. Like, there's no, this guy like was really good at X sport. You know, there's no like, this guy was really good at lacrosse, so like we're going to turn him into an NBA player. Like, that shit doesn't happen in the NBA. There's, you have to be so incredibly skilled at very specific things. If you are big and athletic and push and fast, and you can push people and fast, then you have a chance to make an NFL roster as like a special teamer guy, you know? Anyway, that's the take. If you disagree with that, you don't know ball. You, there's no like arguing. You just don't know ball. Horse of the Week. That was not a new segment on the show. We've had Horse of the Week a couple times now. Horse of the Week is Mystic Dan, because Mystic Dan won the Kentucky Derby. Now onto the post game. I'm back. I'm so back in the golf department. Went to the driving range. If you remember last time I went to the driving range, I could like barely hit the ball and I kept shanking it and I was like really, really bad and felt like I had never played the sport before. When I went to the driving range, it was like that. Like, I'd never played the sport before for like 10 balls, 10, 15 balls that I hit and then, or like didn't hit very well. And then all of a sudden, like I changed one thing and I was mashing the ball. Just like the best range session I ever had. Texted Loon Megs. I'm consistently hitting my 4-iron 210, like carrying it 210, like one hopping off the on them. Like, the net was at 220. And this is not like we're moving, like, these are like fake grass mats that are in a fixed position every time. So you know that the net is actually 220 because where you're hitting the ball from doesn't move. It's not like we're hitting on a patch of grass and you change the lines. Like, where you're hitting from does not move. The net is 220. And so I'm hitting 4-iron and it's bouncing and hitting the net before it bounces again, like every time. So I'm carrying it like 210. And then I'm hitting driver like high off the net and like potentially over. Now, it sounds like I'm glazing myself right now. I shot 103 the next day. So obviously it didn't happen. But, you know, I went out there and I was like, I'm hitting the ball so well that I have to like try to put this on the course the next day, because I don't even know really what I changed. Other than I'm like swinging really hard and taking the ball, the club back like really quickly. But I'm like I've never hit an iron shot that like just was so like high in the air. Like, I'm hitting these things with like even like long irons, just hitting that so like beautifully high and straight on that range session. On the actual course, hit it like shit. And my back hurt like crazy because I'd been swinging really hard. So I think we're going to have to like find a little medium where I can still hit it comfortably and straight, but without like needing to hit it so far and like swinging the shit out of the ball and hurting my back and, being inconsistent. So, we'll update that again. 'Cause you know, it wasn't fun to shoot 103, when I thought that I was fucking Tiger Woods the day before. But best golf update. Also been back in the gym a little bit. Maybe that has been affecting it. Not really sure. Like, my semester finally fucking ended, so I can, like, get after it a little bit. A little hard body summer. So hopefully that happens. You know, we'll update on whether the body is hard by the end of the summer. Anyway, that's the pod. The emoji you should use is, I have no fucking clue. You know, like the Chinese lantern? Let's do that one. I don't know why.